This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 167 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
Well, we've had a cold for a few days there that put a little bit of a crimp on some of the podcasting activities, but mostly running on all cylinders, ready to go. We've got lots of great stories this episode, David.
Yeah, and I actually think I might actually be able to see them tonight. I had real issues last week with these new glasses, but I seem to be getting in focus.
Perfect.
So on that pun, we got a lot of stories. The Smithsonian adds another drone to the collection. Ariane begins a subscription service. The UK wants to crash drones into airplanes. Beyond visual line of sight at Ames. And a video of the week from my favorite town in the Jersey Shore, as well as some listener mail. So I guess we should get started. The first story comes from my favorite place on the planet, and Roger Connor, who is our favorite curator for UAVs at the Smithsonian Institute, said that they got a new exhibit at the Udvar-Hazy Center, which is the museum out at Dulles, next to their old Dash, which is a torpedo-carrying 50s vintage helicopter drone that the Navy used, and they got a Scan Eagle.
And it's not just any old Scan Eagle, is it, David? We know at the Smithsonian, when they display aircraft, or the aircraft they pick for display, are not just some random aircraft. Each one of them has some kind of history or significance to it. And this Scan Eagle does as well.
It does. It is the first one to complete a BVLOS commercial mission in the National Aerospace System, which was a track inspection for the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway. The Smithsonian requires the aircraft to be historically significant, and beyond line of sight and a commercial application is a big deal. And so it's going to be on display at the museum. It was donated by Boeing, their subsidiary, in situ. So congratulations to the Smithsonian, and it's really kind of cool.
Yeah, I think probably most people are familiar with the Scan Eagle. It's a pretty popular UAV, fixed wing, of course, a little over 10-foot wingspan, body length about 5 feet. It's large, but it's got a modest payload capability, 7.5 pounds maximum payload, but it's got a long endurance, up to 24 hours endurance with a 15,000-foot service ceiling. And I think, David, this is actually used by a number of different companies, or countries, rather, around the world.
They do, and the Army and the Navy and the Air Force and the Coast Guard have taken it. It's pretty ubiquitous in the military world. And in fact, Iran has captured one or two of them, and it has put them in, made copies of them called the Yasir, which they've seen in Lebanon as well as over Iraq. So it's a wing with some tailplanes on the end, with a pusher propeller. You've probably seen this, and it's very famous for its recovery system via boats and the Army, which is they crash it into a net. If you Google Scan Eagle, you'll see usually the catapult launches and recoveries.
We'll look forward to seeing it when you and I are next at the Udvar-Hazy Center, David, which should be Father's Day 2017, if everything goes according to plan.
Well, that's Lord willing and the creek don't rise.
Right.
Well, the next one is a really interesting business proposition, not necessarily a aircraft proposition, and that's Aireon introduces flexible UAS subscription solution for law enforcement at IACP 2016. This was from a press release, but they're offering public safety agencies a monthly subscription. They'll teach you how to fly and you can rent the aircraft.
This is very interesting. This is, you know, the drone as a service. And it makes a lot of sense. As you mentioned, David, this was announced at the IACP. That's the International Association of Chiefs of Police at their annual conference. And, you know, if you think about it, you take a public service agency like a police department or something, and you can envision them using drones for a lot of really good reasons, good purposes, good missions. But I mean, do you really want your local police department to develop what kind of amounts to an aviation department, someone that can maintain these, select them, maintain them, keep them outfitted with the proper sensors, just all of the work that goes into operating a UAV? And here it sounds like Aireon Labs takes a lot of that responsibility on themselves, charges a fee. I think in the article they mentioned, or maybe on the Aireon website, we'll have a link to that in the show notes, I think they mentioned that pricing starts as low as $99 a day. It makes a ton of sense to me to offer a service like this for public service agencies.
I know a lot of our local law enforcement in the suburbs, sometimes the townships will get together and combine resources to make a purchase for one thing. So this is kind of a nice way that they could get a couple of departments together and they could purchase the service and use it as necessary. You don't think there'll be an overlap for each police department. So it's a really neat thinking out of the box kind of plan.
The services include things like the Skyranger UAS, program launch and support services, assured operational availability, which includes in-field hardware redundancy, provision of spare parts, things like that, investment protection in life software and equipment upgrades, hull and liability insurance, also secure remote distribution of video and imagery. So it seems like a pretty comprehensive service. I can't wait to see if other UAS providers come along and also offer service packages like this.
So let's talk about one of your favorite subjects. We've talked about this a lot over the years on Airplane Geeks about your former company shooting frozen turkeys into engines. Well, the UK wants to crash some drones into some airplanes to see what happens. And this was from the IBT Times. UK government to test drone safety by deliberately crashing UAVs into passenger airplanes.
Yeah. It's kind of a clickbait title to a certain extent, because it's very dramatic and it sounds kind of scary. I'm sure many members of the general public will click to find out what that's all about. But what's happening is the Department of Transport and the Civil Aviation Authority, the CAA, and the Ministry of Defense have been ordered by the government to begin tests. Now, I think this is something that I really expected to see start a long time ago. There's a lot of speculation about what happens if a drone hits an airplane in flight. Could it take out an airliner? Would it cause so much damage as to represent a big safety issue, or just exactly what? Now, you can theoretically calculate maybe the kinetic energy and the damage and all that, but nothing is going to substitute for actual physical tests, which is what engineers do. So I'm really happy to see this starting here. I hope it's some good testing that's got results that are widely applicable and that's shared with agencies across the world, because we need more of this kind of testing.
Especially with integration into the airspace. I mean, let's figure out what happens before it happens in the real world.
Right.
So we'll keep following up on this. I mean, it is sort of a clickbait title, but it's not surprising to either one of us. I mean, structural testing and testing to failure is what airplane companies do.
Right.
So we talked about the Scan Eagle operating beyond visual line of sight. Well, NASA is, this is another one of those clickbait titles. NASA conducts out-of-sight drone tests in Nevada. And this was actually from NASA.gov. The Unmanned Aircraft Systems Traffic Management, or UTM, is starting to now test beyond line-of-sight drones. We know that they've been doing sense and avoid testing with their Arcana as well as some surrogate aircraft. Now they're actually moving into beyond line of sight. So that's completely different sense and avoid technology that you, and sooner or later there's going to be autonomy.
Well, this is an important step. NASA keeps making a lot of progress with their UTM research platform. I think what they've done here is connect some different drone tracking systems to the UTM research platform. They flew a number of missions, I think different drones, different UAVs. They tested flying manned and unmanned aircraft in the same airspace. They've also explored the operators of multiple drones using common data exchange protocols and even dynamic rerouting, where the UAV itself detects something and requests flight plan changes. So this is great stuff. Of course, an obvious question or point to raise is, okay, so what happens next? How does this actually get used? And I think the next step in this process involves the FAA test sites.
Right. And NASA is going to offer the information out to the test sites so they can do a couple of things. Validation, NASA's doing all of this, but you having second parties out at the NASA test, out at the other test sites, the FAA test sites, can provide validation data, which is really important. You know, we want this to be recreatable, not just a one-off. So the other part of it is assessing whether they were valid tests? Were they reasonable scenarios? Were the results reasonable? So NASA's done the hard work, but now comes the really hard work of double-checking and triple-checking what they did, and then the FAA signing off on it to start releasing it out to build hardware and software.
You know, David, sometimes it's easy to look at this sort of thing, this technology advancement, and say, oh, you know, it moves so slowly. You know, it takes months and months and years to make progress, to get to the point where it's actually implemented in products that you can purchase and fly. But I guess the point is that in the aviation industry, in aerospace, it's this kind of meticulous, careful, step-by-step planned testing that leads to much better end results than another approach that might produce results much more quickly, but it just isn't as comprehensive and doesn't provide the levels of safety and that sort of thing that you expect in this go slow kind of process. So I know it's frustrating for many people, but this is the right way to do it, I guess, is where I'm coming from on it.
And in all fairness, Max, it really hasn't been that altogether slow. It may seem like it's slow because the technology is changing so much. But, I mean, how many years have we been talking about this now? It's been moving fairly quickly that we've got vehicles that are flying remotely that are safely avoiding other vehicles that are flying remotely. So it's, you're right. It does seem pretty tedious and fact-checking, et cetera, but it's also moving. I don't want to say that it's moving incredibly fast, but I don't think it's moving unreasonably slow either. So, well, we like unmanned systems here. Not only do we like airplanes, so that's the primary focus, we got rowboats this week. And I just couldn't leave this one alone. Rowboats being R-O-B-O-A-T-S. This is from geektime.com. Maritime drones have a long voyage ahead before they become commonplace. They're robot boats or rowboats.
I thought that's pretty clear. Somebody had a light bulb go off when they thought of that name, I think. But this self-sailing boats. And one of the things this article talks about and points out is that unmanned or self-sailing boats, they're operating in a much more complex environment oftentimes than a autonomous or robotic land vehicle, or the same for an unmanned aircraft. Certainly, there's a lot of variables in each of those cases, too. But when you're dealing with, you know, being on the surface of an ocean, weather, wave height, the rolling sea, you know, all of that, winds, all of that contribute, I think, to some extra complexity. So this is no easy task.
It's an interesting story, and we've talked about a little bit about, you know, remote control subs firing remote control drones, and these water taxis will be interesting, and it's a quality Dutch product. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, up to Canada, our friends to the north. This is from Lexology.com. Canadian skies abuzz, the regulation of drones and UAVs in Canadian airspace. So an article points out that last year in 2015, Transport Canada issued a notice of proposed amendment to its UAV regulations, and they've been working with, you know, a variety of different stakeholders since then. What they're trying to do is get to some new proposed regulations that they're looking to publish for formal comment next year, early next year, spring of 2017. So they're looking at making some changes. I think the Canadian UAV rules are known as being kind of liberal in many ways, although some of the features of the current rules are that operators require a SFOC, a Special Flight Operations Certificate, from Transport Canada, unless the UAV you're flying is exempt. Now, there's a couple of different types of exemptions currently. There's an exemption for recreational UAVs because they're considered model aircraft. And there are some exemptions for non-recreational UAVs as well. They have two categories. There's an exemption for very small UAVs, which is those under 2 kilograms, and an exemption for small UAVs, which is 2 to 25 kilograms. And these exemptions still include some restrictions, things like a visual line of sight, flying in daylight, Class G airspace only. It's got to be below 300 feet AGL. They have a distance restriction from airports and built-up areas, 9 kilometers. And they also have requirements for maintaining a certain lateral distance away from the general public. But they're considering some new rules that kind of changed the game around a little bit.
The process now will be for all drones greater than 25 kilograms and beyond visual line of sight. Streamline requirements for all drones under 25 kilograms. They're making the line in the sand saying that pretty much anything over 25 kilograms is probably a commercial UAV or UAS versus a hobbyist, which would be most hobbyist drones are under 25 kilograms.
But not strictly, because interestingly enough, for these two categories, above and below 25 kilograms, they're looking at risk-based rules that operate, I think, irrespective of whether it's a commercial or whether it's a hobbyist use, which that's kind of appealing to me. The reason for the mission, you know, whether it's you flying a device in a public park or the same device being flown to do a structure inspection, it seems like the same rules should apply. So it's kind of a different approach that I think than the FAA is taking to a certain degree. So it's pretty interesting, but there's some speculation here, and we'll have to wait until the new year, 2017, to see just exactly what kinds of requirements come out of the Transport Canada.
It's an interesting, now that we've got our rules, we can start comparing, and I have a feeling that there's going to be give and take for a lot of these countries. You know, Canada was pretty much ahead of the curve, and then the U.S. came in, and now they're so it'll be interesting to watch the ebb and flow of the way the rules come in to see if things start becoming standardized across the globe. I know Canada is in more of a hurry because of their huge agricultural market and the size of their farms in Canada. They definitely want to use it for precision alcohol. Can you precision agriculture? So, and while using precision alcohol, you want to stop delivery drones from crashing into things.
Oh dear. What have you been doing this evening, David? Yeah, this is a tech story from New Scientist. Quantum film sensor stops delivery drones crashing into things. This is a little bit beyond my technical knowledge, but here's what I've gathered from this. Envisage Technologies. They've developed this new technology they call quantum film. And the idea is optical sensors created with quantum film will allow small drones to sense and avoid obstacles. So how does that work? Well, quantum film is a photosensitive layer, and it uses material that's made up of quantum dots, or they call it nanoparticles, that can be dispersed, I'm quoting, dispersed to form a grid once they are synthesized. Just like paint, this dispersion of solid materials can be coated onto a substrate and allowed to dry. So compared to the conventional CMOS type of engine or image sensor that you'd have in your phone or your camera, these quantum film sensors have 5 times the light sensing capability. So, okay, that's great. Where does the sense and avoid part of this come in? Well, this new sensor can detect obstacles, they say, up to 20 meters away, and using a technique that is called structured light. And under this concept, laser dots are projected ahead at objects, and they're distorted by the objects that they strike. So with that, the sensor can infer the location and the distance of those obstacles. So, David, that's just...
It's radar using light, Max.
Using laser light, right. And a sensor that can detect that faint light.
Bounce
it's difficult,
back.
That bounce back. And it's difficult in daylight conditions. Some of the critics of this wonder if this would even work in a snowy condition, for example. But it's a fascinating concept. It still has some development required. The company Envisage is apparently discussing applications with partners for some commercial and also consumer applications. So interesting technology, cost, size, all of those kind of questions need to be answered.
It's really cool technology, but isn't that why we do this show?
Nanoparticles. How can you get cooler than that?
Well, we could... And on that bad segue, we're going to talk about FAA drone regulations. It doesn't get any more exciting than FAA drone regulations. This is from Hoosier Ag Today, and it's interesting because the FAA, if you 5 years ago said that this was going to be a pair, I would have told you were nuts. But the American Farm Bureau Federation, the AFBF, is working with the FAA to work on precision agriculture and how to explain to non-pilots, you know, farmers, they don't necessarily know aviation unless they do crop dusting, but they want to use UAVs. Well, how to get that balance, you know, how to educate them and get them up to speed.
Yeah, this is part of an FAA outreach program to drone users, which I think is really outstanding. And in this case, they had a webinar, an educational webinar, along with the AFBF. And certainly the agricultural industry has many, many, many potential applications here. And a lot of farmers and others in the industry are, well, not fully up to speed yet in terms of what is Part 107 all about, what can they do, what can they not do, all of that kind of thing. So the FAA has chosen to provide this kind of outreach to help educate, in this case, the Farm Bureau Federation, which is great. I hope we get to see a lot more of this in other industries as well. I'm not sure how many or how much the FAA has in the way of resources to conduct this sort of thing, David, but hopefully they'll be able to do a lot of this.
Yeah, and I like the fact that the FAA is being, I hate the word proactive because I had a manager that used to say there's no such thing as either you're active or you're not. You can't be for activity. But using a lot of forethought, and they're seeing where there is going to be growth and trying to get ahead of the curve. So, and acting with partners like this, they can communicate their message and the partners can translate it into a way that their membership can understand. Does that make sense? That it's a, they're acting as using the organization like AFBF as the mouthpiece for the FAA. Here's what we need. You choose to communicate to the people how it will best work for them to understand it.
All right. Well, hey, what about a video of the, you know, we need some video of the week music, I think. But what do we have this week, David?
Well, last week or 2 weeks ago was a UAS conference in my favorite town in South Jersey, Cape May, New Jersey. And one of the, at the two-day conference, one of the things they did was they had drone races, first-person view drone races out on the beach. So you get to see a little bit of where I was married via high-speed drone.
No, wait a minute. You weren't married via high-speed drone.
No, but I was married on the beach that they filmed this on.
Right, but not at the same time.
No, not in the same
You didn't
time,
have drones right. flying around your head as you and Shell were getting hitched.
I didn't know Parker at the time back then. So, I mean, otherwise he would have been flying a drone over my wedding. so it's a very fun, it's a two-minute quick video. The conference actually sounded like it was very productive. Our listener Ken went and said the presentations were good.
All right, well, it's a fun video of the week.
And, of course, this is where I say, if you have a video of the week or you've shot some video footage that you'd like the world to see, at least our listeners, send it to feedback@theuavdigest.com. We love seeing people's footage, especially our listeners' footage. So let's, speaking of feedback@theuavdigest.com, our first one was from Mark Fink. And he wrote to us earlier this week, are either one of you going to be at the Javits Photo Expo this Thursday? Well, unfortunately, it's nope. Thursday night and we're recording it. So the answer was no. But he's started to do some fine art photography with his Inspire 1. So we'll put a link to his show notes. And there's some HDR mosaics stitched together. And he, of course, said, thanks for a great podcast. But some really nice footage. So take a look at Mark's northernlight.net/aerial and check out some of his still photography. We talk about a video a week. This is still photography. And our next feedback, Max?
From Tony in Sydney. He passed along the link to an article at ABC. This is drones being used to zero in on pests in vineyards and orchards. This is how do you deal with insects that damage crops. And what they're doing is they're attaching, well, sort of a sock-like device to the underside of a drone, and they're filling it with predatory insects and vermiculite. So the idea is that you fly the drone over the crops, in this case citrus trees or grapevines, things like that, and you release the predatory insects, or you just release the contents of the sock, and so the insects are sort of attached to the vermiculite, and it all drops down, and so you can target areas of the crop that need eradication of pests, and you're not doing it with chemicals, you're doing it with predatory insects. What a great idea. So thanks, Tony, for sending that in.
Because we have to keep our vineyards safe from predators, you know, and orchards, you know. I'm a firm believer in wine and hard cider, which is why I keep saying precision alcohol tonight.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of the UAV Digest. We've had fun bringing you episode 167. As always, you can find us at our homepage, which is the UAVDigest.com. And if you'd just like to zip straight to the show notes for this episode, that's at the UAVDigest.com/167. That'll have links to all the news stories, some other items as well. So we invite you to take a look at the show notes.
Yeah, because how else are you going to find the video of the week, as well as the photographs from our listener? You can go to our website, theuavdigest.com. You can always follow us on Twitter at UAVDigest. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAVDigest. We'd love you to become part of our Slack listener team, where we talk about anything and everything. And you can do that by sending us your email at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or you can go to our website and go to uavdigest.com/team. We'd love to hear some feedback from you via iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play. If you'd like to get some swag or become a patron, that's cafepress.com or patreon.com. And all those links, again, are on our homepage. So with that, I'm going to say this is David off to get a precision alcohol.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.